Now entering Nerdist.com.
You made it weird. You made it weird. You made it weird. Oh, yeah. You made it weird. You made it weird.
Yes, you did.
You made it weird. Oh, yeah.
You made it weird with Pete Holmes.
Yes, you did.
Weirdos, no surprise here. Love this episode. Mike Lawrence. You know, it's funny, some people have been emailing the show and saying that they would like some less established comedians to come on the show just to talk about the experience of being a comedian on the up, trying to make it just to that next level. Not huge, just the next echelon, and that's perfect. Enter Mike Lawrence. Actually, shortly after he did the show, we talk about it, he ended up taping Conan. I actually say during this, I go, didn't you do Conan? And then lo and behold, I was prophesying. It turns out I was prophesying. Anyway, so real quick, what do I have to say? Weird@Nerdist.com to email the show. Ugly Americans is on Wednesdays on Comedy Central. I do a lot of voices for that show. Guess which ones and win absolutely nothing. I'm reading what I wrote. Plug writing on the FB wall. Yep. I love when people write favorite moments on the Facebook wall. It's facebook.com/ you made it weird. And live dates are on PeteHolmes.com as always. This Saturday, if you're in New York City, come to the live You Made It Weird at the Gramercy, 10 p.m. Michael Ian Black, Jim Gaffigan, Jesse Klein, Matt McCarthy. That one's going to be hot. Hot? I don't talk that way. Anyway, go to my website for other dates. This show is always, not as always, but as the past couple, is brought to you by Amazon, which is pretty exciting because I use Amazon to buy everything. All you got to do is go to Nerdist.com, go to this episode, click on the Amazon banner, and then shop as you normally would. You can get anything. Well, you can even get video games. You could get all the great games. Games like all Long Piece Tetris. That's a favorite. All the Long Piece. Streets of Rage 4, Somewhat Angry Streets. That's a classic for the Genesis. Hulk Hogan Needs to Find His Hotel Key. It's a nail biter. Frogger 3, Skateboard Teens Jaywalking. It's a fun one. And Street Fighter vs. Roe vs. Wade. Play the episode, Catherine. Her name's Katie. She hates that.
Geek, so.
It also looks like the girl from Freaks and
I'm
Geeks.
I'm trying to be both at the same time.
You're trying to be Wolverine's arch nemesis. And the I love that we don't even know the name of the lead character of Freaks and Geeks. Here come the ad replies.
Lindsay Weir, as aptly played by Linda Cardinelli.
Okay, you did know.
Yeah.
So you were just you were passing as a normal.
Yes.
You are not a normal. You're a what are you? You tell I me am, what are you?
I am Jin. No.
See, what's that reference? Is that a Tekken reference?
No, that's a type of genie that has its own freedom. I learned that from Kazam, which I watched last week.
Is that the Shaq one?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I thought you were going to be way out of my depth.
I could grant you your greatest desires. What I can't do is make a three-pointer. Like, it's, it's the worst.
That's so, not in the movie, is it?
Well,
he can't make a three-pointer.
No, he can't.
I'm going to say this is definitely the first episode anyone's dared a Shaq impression or a Kazam?
Yeah.
Kazam reference. And you did both.
He does turn the main villain in the film into a basketball at the end and dunks him into the trash and says, "Yo, garbage."
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, that's it.
This got made.
Which then I spent the rest of my day wondering if that guy was still a basketball the rest of his life.
That got in your brain and you couldn't let it go.
Yeah.
What I want to know, I'm sitting with Mike Lawrence.
Yeah.
What group do you look? What is it, man? Comic book nerd? Comedy nerd? Dweeb? Dork?
Doofus? No.
Doofus? I'm not even trying to insult you.
Yeah.
You are just...
You're doing lines that Niedermeyer is doing in Animal House.
I don't... Oh, God. Please stop referencing things that comedy nerds are going to feel I should see. I've never seen Animal House.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that crazy?
That's great.
Thanks for coming on the show to uncover the fraud that I am. Yeah, it's okay. I was actually just talking because people are really upset.
If you say that, but you've seen Van Wilder, then I think comedy nerds will really hate you. If you've every... An old school and every movie that Animal House spawned.
I'd like to be clear in this moment. I own Animal House because I intend to watch it. Just like The mood's got to hit you pretty.
You're making it sound like it's a bottle of wine. You know?
We're going to uncork the 76.
Yeah, I have a Landis 78, and yeah. I just have to.
I just had the occasion hasn't been right. Yeah. I like watching documentaries, Mike Lawrence. I like watching real things.
My girlfriend makes documentaries. She's a producer for a living.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's my favorite by far.
It's amazing. She's been working on a Holocaust film for the past 8 months.
What is it? Dweeb? Doofus?
I love that I'm admitting I have a girlfriend and you still have and to I bring still, me back to I what need, you think I am.
Now, what are you? What is your deal? What
Dance
is your
in my
deal?
Box, puppet.
Stop talking about your girlfriend and tell me the difference between the gray and the red Hulk.
Yeah.
You be you.
All right. Okay. Well, first of all, the difference between the gray and the red Hulk. Gray Hulk is actually Hulk's original color scheme. And this is when Hulk was first created and the moon triggered the transformations. And so he was Gray Hulk for, I want to say.
So at the beginning of Hulk, it wasn't anger, it was the moon?
It was the moon. Now, they changed him to green because it was a much cheaper color to print.
Wow,
gray was much more expensive. That's every comic. Like, we all have to be like, oh no, but the artistic choice that they no, it's all money. It's all fucking money.
Oh,
you know?
Jesus, you just got so punk rock. It's just about the cash, man. Green, yeah. You talk about Hulk being green, man. He's money, man.
He's green for a reason. Yeah.
Well, red is the cheapest color to paint a barn. I'm just trying to shoot in some facts that I know.
And then red is actually General Thunderbolt Ross.
Everybody knew this.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
Thaddeus Ross, who was the Hulk's main adversary for years, and he finally became a Hulk of his own. So they're two different characters. Now, in the late 80s in Peter David's run, he had Green Hulk revert back to Gray Hulk for a while.
He said, fuck the budget.
Yeah.
We're doing this in HD. I want to do great.
He was Michael Bay.
So what is
shit.
A comic book nerd? What are you?
You want to know what I
–
You want to know what I really am?
Yeah. Yes, I do. You're certainly a
this
comedy.
This is the beginning of like every R&B video. You want to know what I really am?
Yeah.
Dance sequence.
It starts raining.
I'm afraid to let go. If I had to describe myself in one sentence – I'm a person who is afraid to quit anything.
Because you mean things that you were interested in as a youth?
Yeah, I just haven't been able, like, because I could say I'm a huge wrestling fan too. Like, I could say I love comic books. I could say I love wrestling. I could say I worked at McDonald's for 7 years.
I
still do open mics after 6 years of doing comedy.
Sure.
And what is the theme in all of that? That I can't give anything up.
You're an addict.
Yeah.
What does that mean? What it would mean to abandon comic books? What if you stopped keeping up with what color Hulk was?
Oh, I have.
You
in,
have.
In a sense, well, I don't read them as much because I don't have a lot of money. Like, mm-hmm. I can't go out and buy the new books. And I mean, it's like when you see guys like on a typical Wednesday, if you're reading,
is that
know,
comic book deck?
Yeah. If you're reading, like, they're like what, $3.99 now, $2.99. I mean, they are.
Okay. For those of you who aren't watching the streaming of this episode on video, which you can't.
I'm interviewing myself and Pete's watching. So, Mike, at what point did you realize Gambit was a douche?
I know Gambit. He throws the playing cards.
Total douche. Girls love him. Douche.
Do they? Girls love Gambit?
Yeah, he was Twilight before Twilight existed.
I can see that. He's kind of pale and fey.
Yeah.
But at least the Twilight guys aren't throwing packs of playing cards that have that like orb of energy around them. Nobody likes that. And he has the stick, too.
I always wanted to imagine like Gambit in a fight, and then afterwards he has to play a game of cards with that deck of cards. Like there's no like Ace of Clubs.
There's no Jacks in this entire
thing. Well, there was this thing with a Sentinel. I'm sorry.
Is that how he talks?
Yeah, he's Cajun.
I'm sorry. I had to throw another.
Oh, to me. We're doing the worst Cajun accent.
Fuck you. I don't know why I did Pacino.
This is like the second coming of Katrina right now.
Oh, that's how bad this is?
Yeah.
That's
almost all right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
bad. No, I loved it in a weird and wonderful way.
Yeah.
Let's talk about you as an addict, because I don't know that much about you, Mike.
Okay.
But I do know this. I do know this. You killed that man. I'm just kidding.
No.
I do know this. You are, I think it ties into this addict person, is that when I met you, I used to do an open mic called Gut Bucket. Remember?
That was my first week in the city.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And then, so you did that open mic. And
I went
remember
third.
You went third. Oh, pretty sweet spot.
Yeah.
And you destroyed, man. You destroyed. I still remember that. That was a great open mic that started at midnight in New York.
Yeah.
And like a billion people would sign up. And then you would go up. You were drawn. You were drawn randomly.
Yeah.
You did really well. And then I remember I would ask. I hear about you from time to time that you are just insatiable. You're clearly addicted to comedy. Is that true? Are you like you do every show? You just like you.
I
almost like homeless levels of intensity.
Yeah. I'd say on average like 15 to 20 times a week.
I'm sorry?
Yeah.
Currently?
Yeah.
15 to 20 times a week?
Yeah.
See, that's fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is fucked up. Fucked up. And you have a girlfriend?
Yeah.
How bone dry and neglected is she?
I take. No.
I'm teasing.
Yeah.
You have all the time during the day. In fact, I resent people.
This Reinhold is being a judge, am I right?
I don't know what that Judge Reinhold.
Yeah, man.
I like.
They're simple sometimes.
I was like, what is this, Doctor Who?
You don't have to Wikipedia everything I say. No.
I'm not trying to grill you. I'm trying to understand you, man. 15 to 20 times. What does that look like? What's a Monday look like? This is in New York where you live.
Yeah, okay. Monday, we'll start off. Now, I will say this with the girlfriend. I've had multiple interventions in the past couple months.
No, with comedy interventions?
With friends of mine who were like...
I'm sorry, comedy interventions?
Yeah.
I thought I was breaking new ground. I thought I'd be the first person to be like, Mike, you might want to pump the brakes, buddy.
No.
And can I actually, if I may, because I hate listening to the show and wishing I could have said something against myself, what I will say against myself is... I used to perform a shit ton, and I saw my girlfriend a lot. So I just like to say that. It is possible.
Yeah. Now I take a night off.
Yep.
Which is really healthy. I take a weeknight off, and then...
You're still getting up 20 times with a night off.
20 is like the extreme.
Sure.
Well, you know...
I would say 10 is extreme.
Yeah. My minimum when I moved to the city was 10, and I've never given it up.
Okay. That sounds weird. Let's talk about that.
Okay, no, let's... It goes deep.
I didn't prepare that much for you because I was like, I bet he's got some weird stuff going on. This is unexpected, though. I thought we were going to talk about McDonald's, your family.
Oh, we'll
get into that.
And it all ties together, too.
Oh, sure.
It's, yeah.
Yeah, 20 times a week. So on a Monday, are we doing one of those early a.m.?
We're doing a 6 o'clock. I do have standards. Like, I don't do the paid ones anymore. I mean, some of the paid ones, like, they let me do for free. So.
Paid meaning you have to
it's
buy
weird.
Drinks.
It's so weird having open mic tenure. You know, because it's like, it's basically when you have open mic tenure, like, you shouldn't be doing this anymore. Here's how I'll start off the explanation of all of this. When I was 15, I started doing poetry. My school was offering like advertising teen poetry readings at the library. And I went.
Oh, God. Do they give you a handgun as you go in?
I mean, you are going to fucking judge the fuck out of me for all of this.
No. You're in a safe space.
I appreciate that.
You're in the weird treehouse.
Yeah.
Speak freely, friend.
Yeah.
No, really.
Okay. So I started, and this is how I began performing. I started at the age of 15 doing poetry. And
that's bold, man.
And it was the day before my birthday, which for a few years after I would call my rebirth day. Because the thing was, I didn't really have an identity. You know, I didn't know who I was. I tried karate. I tried, you know, I wanted to be an astronaut until I realized the math involved. You know, it's like
not just cruising around in the stars.
You'd watch Legends of the Hidden Temple and like, and the winner gets space camp. And I'm like, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
And then you're like, astrophysics.
What a jip.
Yeah, the second
it's like when people would give you books in the library and be like, you like UFOs? Read this book. You're like, fuck you, it's still a book.
Yeah.
Fuck you, I like UFOs, not books. But get this dust jacket out of here.
The second you see an astronaut actually talk about what they do, all of the mystique is gone.
Yeah.
You know? It's like when there's like an uncharismatic guy named Buzz, like, how does that work?
Well, what we did was we had to put the thrusters on the...
And I'm like, this sucks.
This guy's name is Buzz?
Yeah.
And now Flapjack Mazoozle's going to explain after thrust.
My name's after Flapjack.
So poetry was the first thing that I really felt like that I was good at because no one tells you you're bad at it. You know?
Oh, that's perfect. I often have said that like theater or like acting in certain things have an advantage over comedy in that like you can tell like a deaf person or blind person, like someone with no senses could almost tell that a comedian's bombing. You'd be like, yeah. It just feels like someone's bombing in here.
Yeah.
Because like there's
failure
a required,
has a smell.
It also has a smell. There's a required response every 3 seconds. But if you're doing a poem and there's like a punchline in it and it doesn't get a laugh, people might be like, oh, it was clever, or it was like something that we just kind of snap our fingers to. You're absolutely right. So it's a little bit safer.
So
maybe.
And I would go.
Not to say poetry's easy.
Yeah.
I know it's difficult. Go on.
So I would go there and, you know, and then I would go to like, you know, at my school, I would do like, you know, poetry readings. I was a vice president of literary club. Like I wrote a screenplay called Definitive Verse.
Oh, Jesus.
About a teenage poet named Johnny Angel killed himself, and I made my own t-shirt at the Make Your Own T-Shirt store, which there's nothing sadder than going into that place with ambition, you know.
Oh, into a Make Your Own T-Shirt store?
It's like being on a Greyhound bus with hope. It's like, it's just...
That's like your joke about how am I a six-year-old in AA and I'm the one feeling the most shame.
Yeah.
You're fucking great, man. You're good at like going into these really sad kind of situations.
Yeah.
But we are rooting for you. As you're telling this story, I'm like, figure it out. I hope you make a great fucking t-shirt. Go on.
But I wrote the screenplay and that's who I thought I was. Like I was the victim. I remember I didn't get a part in high school drama and I tried hanging myself on the curtain ropes and I had no actual intention to kill myself.
Right.
But Lord, was I happy when someone walked in. I just wanted the attention. I loved Marilyn Manson. Like, that's who I was, one of those kids.
Yeah.
You know? And
are we dyeing hair or makeup or anything?
No, no. I shaved my eyebrows, though.
Okay, that'll get a signal. Yeah. Sends a message.
Which was funny because my mom...
You don't have to shave help into your eyebrows. Just take them off. It's the same
thing. My dad... I remember, because I had joint custody, so when we was at my dad's, and my dad drops me off at my mom's, and she goes, you let him shave his eyebrows? And my dad was like, it's not like I look at him.
Oh, that was sad?
Yeah.
That was sad?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I mean, he's like, we talk, you know? I mean, he's always sitting in the passenger seat. I'm not, like, looking at his face.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and...
So you're looking – this is starting to make sense why you might want to do – you know, you might want to up that to 25 shows a week based on where you're coming from, man.
Yeah.
I mean, not to minimize it, but I mean like you had a need for attention. You weren't getting looked at enough as a young person.
Yeah.
So that's gonna need some redemption.
So I go to this teen poetry thing and one of – such a sad moment in my life.
I'm a little worried because you didn't preface the other moments that we've talked about with a warning, like hanging yourself.
So I'm like, this is like, I've been going there for 3 years, and I was like dominating the fuck out of this thing. Like,
yes.
Like, it was all like 15-year-old girls, and one of them would have like two poems, and one of them would have three, or, you know... And I would have like nine, and they wouldn't even let me read all of mine.
Yeah, wow.
And I was like, you don't understand. If I don't read them now, they won't be important. This is poetic journalism.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I was so sure of myself.
Really?
I had so much more confidence as a poet than I've ever had as a comedian.
Really?
Because now it's like, maybe I won't do good, or maybe it won't go the way I want it. But I knew I was fucking great and that I was going to change the world with my sonnets.
That's actually come up a couple times is trying to recapture the certainty and the playfulness and the kind of fun of the brain of a of what we were as children. Because if we were kids, Mike, you could have come over and I'd be like, let's play. You know what I mean? And we would have done it. We never would have been like, what does that mean? It's going to be weird. We would have just kind of started building worlds.
But there's an innocence
having
to
fun.
That too, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. That's good. Like, and now if you're improvising or if you're riffing on stage or whatever, you're just trying to go back to what you used to be really good at as a kid.
Yeah.
Hopefully with an adult sensibility, I can't go up and be like, the fart machine's after us. But I mean, like, we should strive to get back to that. So I'm not really that surprised that you were very confident as a young poet.
Yeah.
So you're not doing your poems. They won't let you read your poems, which were relevant to that day.
They would let me read like 8 of them, but they're like, look, you know, there are other people. And I was just like, no, but I'm the best. And it was insane.
God.
It was so insane.
I'm picturing you dressed as little Hunter S. Thompson for some reason. Like, fuck you!
Did Hunter S. Thompson have a Cyclops t-shirt?
I'm guessing at some point.
Just a t-shirt with an actual Cyclops on it.
He had the monster, the Cyclops on it. Yes.
Yeah, he's got super strength, but he doesn't have any I-beam powers.
And no depth perception.
Yeah.
And kind of a Kumail reference. Anyway, go on.
So I go and...
You're doing your poems.
No, I remember is my dad would drop me off and he'd be outside.
Old no look.
Yeah. And I show up once, and the woman's like, Mike, you can't come here anymore. This is a teen poetry reading. You're like 18, and, it's about these kids, and you're just taking it over. You have to stop. They cut me off. They just cut me off.
Why? Were the other kids like 13 or something?
Some of them were.
Yeah.
And I just...
This is pretty tragic right now.
And it destroyed me. And then I started going to... I had to go find other open mics because that was the place I started. So that was the place I kept going. And I went to like a Barnes & Noble poetry reading where it was like all old people.
Yes, different crowd.
Yeah. And, you know, and like the anger inside my vessel ruins those who have hurt me, you know. Like everything.
That was real.
Everything I wrote sounded like something Ghost Rider would say.
But you couldn't
Vengeance
speed
is
off.
Mine, you know.
You couldn't speed off on a bike.
Yeah.
You just stood there and waited for tepid applause.
Yeah, every.
From old people.
All of my poems sounded like a speech Alfred gave to Batman. Some people just want to watch the world burn.
The size of a tangerine.
Yeah.
Okay, we're dorking out. What am I, comic book nerd?
You just want a tangerine, you know?
Okay, so that's heartbreaking. Now you're going to open mics with old Barnes & Noble open mics.
Yeah.
When does comedy come in? I'm waiting for comedy to save you. When will comedy save you? I'm invested in the story.
In my late 30s? I don't know.
Oh, you're it hasn't happened yet?
Yeah. No, it's getting there. How I started comedy was I was going to this place called the Chocolate Moose, and I'd been doing poetry there for a couple years, and... It's so sad because so many people, they're how I started stories are, you know, like, oh, I saw Burr or I saw, Mitch Hedberg or like I listened to Pryor records and it just inspired me.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a really shitty comic and I was like, I could do better than that.
Yeah.
So I went the next week and wrote jokes.
I've said many times that if you're thinking about doing comedy, go to a open mic.
Yeah.
And then
you won't
exactly
be the worst
the
person. Yeah.
You won't be the worst person.
And I was like, oh, this guy's fucking terrible.
I mean, that's exactly the same. I mean, like, I had my time of listening to Pryor and all that sort of stuff, kind of doing the academic side of it.
I never liked comedy. I hated it.
Really?
My mom did it. It was just the reason.
Well, yeah, let's talk. I knew your mom did. Who's your mom?
My mom was, Alice Colon, originally, remarried from Alice Lawrence. My uncle also did it in New York, but, I wasn't as close to him. But my mom did it, and she taught comedy traffic school and stuff. And
where is this?
This is all in Florida.
Florida.
I was born and raised. And
so your mom did – was she doing stand-up when you were, alive?
Yeah. She
– She'd go and do weekends?
Yeah. She wasn't – like I said, my parents divorced at a very early age, when I was, 4 or 5. And they would, so we had joint custody, which is weird. I had two childhoods at once
mm-hmm.
or no childhood at all.
Zero times zero.
I had two. No. And I love my parents. Like, that's the one thing that I could say is different from the person on stage and the person in real life is that I come off as, like, very, like, angry with my parents, you mm-hmm. know? And I love them, and they're great people. You know, it took a while. It's, you know, a lot of your own problems you don't accept as your own problems for a long time, and you just blame them on other people.
Sure.
But no, my dad's great. You know, he sobered up for us, and my mom. I remember, like, I was like 12 or 13. And I went to a steakhouse and saw my mom do comedy, and the opener was my substitute teacher. And
oh, my,
like,
God.
So, of course, why would I like comedy?
You know? My God. That's perfect. It's something your mom did.
Yeah.
And your substitute teacher did.
Would you want to line dance if you saw your mom do Achy Breaky Heart? It's the same fucking thing. You're just like,
it wasn't cool at all.
No.
But then add this Barnes & Noble, you saw someone do bad stand-up?
Watch your mom rap.
Oh, God.
You'll never like rap again.
Oh, my God. I think I may have seen my mom rap.
Yeah.
Maybe the Fruity Pebbles rap.
Yeah.
There was a Fruity Pebbles commercial. So that was pretty catchy.
I started stand-up at the Chocolate Moose. And
oh, that's right, Chocolate Moose, which is hilarious, by the way. Good work, restaurant.
Yeah.
So you started doing it the next week. Do you remember your first set? Was it terrible?
Yeah.
Was it okay?
No, there were some okay jokes in there. You know, it wasn't terrible, but, you know, the best thing about it was it got me closer to my mom than I'd ever been. Because I have motor skill deficiency in my hands, so I can't really drive a car. I'm terrible at sports. Like, I had no choice but to be a nerd. Like, I didn't.
Right.
The jock.
You were bred for it.
Yeah. I mean.
Yeah. You can flip comic. I'm not even trying to make fun of you. Yeah, but like, comic books are okay.
Yeah.
Video games.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Video games are. I actually literally in that moment was concerned. I was like, Mike, tell me you can play video games. Video games need you. There's a world of Skyrim out there. Surely.
There's a woman named Zelda.
Yeah. Oh, is that what the legend is?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're Link, and you're trying to save Zelda?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I thought you were looking for a triangle.
Yeah. Why does Link look more like a woman than Zelda?
He does look like a Link. A woman. I remember in the magazine Nintendo Power, there was a great joke, which I thought was fantastic. Ooh, I have two for you.
Yeah.
Nintendo Power had a little joke section. It was my favorite section. It was like, what is the villain in Legend of Zelda?
Ganon.
What is Ganon's favorite food? Sausage links. Which was okay. They're all word puns. The one that I submitted, I sent it in every time. What's the name of the guy in Mortal Kombat? Shang Tzu or something? The last
Shang
guy?
Tsung.
Shang Tsung. I was like, I wrote, what if Shang Tsung narrated the battle with him? Then the punchline was, quote, finish me. I thought that was funny. I still think that's funny.
I remember when I was 10.
Because when you'd fight him, he'd go, excellent. You know what I mean? You're fighting him.
Yeah.
Finish me.
I thought I was a genius when I was 12, and I would just go, everybody Shang Tsung tonight.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Not bad.
Everybody Shang Tsung tonight.
Yeah.
It was a big game. It was a big game.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? Motor skills in your hands. What does that mean? Arthritis? What it would just help?
No, I have like really bad handwriting.
Yeah.
And stuff. I would like the scariest, like, public speaking doesn't terrify me, because what terrified me was when I was like in fourth grade and I would have to like write a math problem on the
God,
wall.
Jesus.
And people are just making fun of my handwriting.
Yeah.
Like I remember, I was in seventh grade, my teacher was like, oh, you could be a doctor someday. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, because I have terrible handwriting. I was like, oh, thanks.
Oh, you almost put hope and joy in a child, but you just made a terrible joke.
I mean, that guy died of lung cancer the next year. Probably it was like because he was shitty to a doctor. The doctor probably didn't if you didn't make fun of my handwriting, you fucking dingus, you know?
The bad handwriting was on the wall for that.
Yeah.
Poor guy. Well, okay. So now your mom does comedy. You do comedy. You do okay.
Yeah.
Do you remember any of your first terrible jokes?
Oh, I could tell you that whole set.
What was the opener?
The opener was and I've seen this.
Did
joke.
You? Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Did you write on your set list like how you folks doing tonight? I've seen a lot of people that.
Oh
start,
nah.
I've seen a lot of beginners that write down like good evening or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like don't forget to say good evening.
My opener was You know, I'm racist. Like whenever I do laundry, I always mix the whites and colors. And I've seen that joke like a bunch from other people, but it was just like,
right.
You know, it was like such a.
You mean you always separate the whites and colors?
Yeah, I always separate the whites and colors.
That's not bad.
And then I went to an all albino school. They had a nickname for me, Darky.
That's not bad. Yeah. I didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
You did it pretty quickly, though.
And, there's so many puns. Something about, like, pales in comparison.
Oh,
and,
my God.
And then my closer was, I heard that laughter was the best medicine, so I went to a children's hospital and just laughed at all the kids.
Oh. Those aren't bad.
Nah.
They're very dark.
Yeah.
How old are you at this point?
I'm 22.
22? I was about 22 when I started. That's great.
So, and now So I do that first week, and that's what I think. Like, I feel so bad for anyone who has to start in New York or L.A. and gets like the 2 minutes, and everyone's watching you and everyone's paying attention. And,
oh yeah!
And, like, thank God I started where I did in Florida.
Yeah, start in a closet.
I did 7 minutes my first time.
I'm not trying to one up you. The first time I did stand up, I did 40 minutes. Because I just invited all my friends. I was like, yeah. I'm going to do stand-up.
Yeah.
And I did 40 minutes of stand-up because that's what you do.
Yeah.
I'm going to put on a show like they the special. It wasn't good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they were very generous and kind. But I'm with you. I was starting – that was in Salem, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
If you went to New York, I've done 40 minutes in New York. I don't know, 15 times. You know, it's very hard to get a
Someone's
long
like,
set.
I just lit you at 2. I don't know what that means.
Yeah. It's hard to start in New York. It's hard to start in L.A. It's great to start in, like, fucking...
Make every mistake. You don't know how to speak into a microphone when you start.
Go have diarrhea somewhere else.
Yeah.
Where no one will tell you that you're having diarrhea. They'll be like, I couldn't get up there and have diarrhea like that. And then go to New York when you got your shit together a little bit. So you're in Florida having diarrhea.
Yeah.
And then you decide to go to New York from there?
Now, well, yeah.
Because we still got to figure out...
This is about, like, a year. I left after... A year, and I was the first actual gig that I ever did. So I go to the Chocolate Moose that first week. I go back the next week. I do 16 brand new minutes. Then this guy was like, "Oh man, there's this show that you should do. It'd be really fun." And I went. It was the first book show I did. It was at a lesbian bar.
Okay,
and that point, the best joke I had within that 3 weeks. Was about breast cancer. You guys, there should be a breast cancer porno, you know.
What?
You know, like featuring Pat Morita as Chemo Sabi. It was like so bad. And someone.
I don't even fully get it, but I kind of think I get it.
You know, like, what do you want me to take, you know, off? My top or my hair, like it
oh,
was
Jesus.
Bad.
But you're trying to be.
I don't
dark.
Know. Any, I mean, yeah, I didn't know any better.
You're going for shock.
I just, you know, you make every mistake possible.
Sure.
I and I thought, you know, I was like, oh, this is just what I'm doing.
I'd like to be clear. There's at least 100 people that listen to you, what do you want me to take off my top or my hair and died laughing. Like that's exactly the kind of humor they're looking for today in that moment.
Yeah, and
there's maybe 10,000 people that didn't, but
yeah, none of them go to a lesbian bar.
Laser accuracy.
Yeah.
Okay, go on. So you're at the lesbian bar,
and like,
I'm sorry to interject. We're going out of order. I believe you're bisexual. Is that right?
I was for a little while.
You dabbled.
Yeah. This goes back to the not knowing who I was. Yeah, I had a boyfriend for like a month.
I thought you, when I knew you in New York, I thought at least you had some jokes where you said you were bisexual.
Yeah. But straight enough to notice. I'm bisexual. I mean, I'm straight enough to notice a beautiful woman, but gay enough to treat her like a person.
Ah, that's good. That's a good joke. That'll win over some ladies. You should have had that at the lesbian bar.
Yeah.
You didn't think you were bisexual. You weren't behaving bisexually. I don't know how to say that.
I just didn't know what I wanted. I mean, I know we're jumping all over the place, but like...
Yeah, I was just wondering because that would have given you some sort of leverage, I suppose, if you could just be like, I know I'm telling that cancer joke, but...
Yeah, but saying that you're half gay at a lesbian bar is still going to get... No, I suck dick. No, that makes me relatable.
You're right. I'm wrong. You get a good look at what an uninformed
it's
person
like,
thinks.
Yeah, maybe. Lesbians versus gays is like the Jets versus Sharks, but with more leather jackets. You know?
God. That's very good. Okay, you're right. You're not going to win them over if I'm thinking of this group correctly.
So I'm at the lesbian, someone threw a beer bottle at me.
Really? Your first booked show?
Yeah, and they're booing and, you know... And the amazing
and then
thing,
the woman from the poetry club comes up and goes, "You can't come here anymore, Michael. This place is for the lesbians. This isn't about you anymore."
The teenage lesbians. The 14-year-old girls.
Does anyone here have a poem? And most of them have a poem.
At first they were girls, but now they're women.
Is that a Little Women reference? I liked it either way. Okay, so a beer bottle, did it hit you?
No.
That's lesbians for you. I'm kidding. Lesbians, I love you. I love
a
you.
A shittier league of their own.
Actually, you know what? Can we back it up a little bit? That's hilarious. That joke would have worked either way. Yeah. If you said the bottle did hit me, I would have said that's lesbians for you. Yeah. If you said the bottle didn't, I would have said that's lesbians for you. Just know that's lesbians for you was in the chamber, and I was going to pull that trigger no matter what you said. That's lesbians for you was going to come out of my face. Yeah. Okay, so didn't hit you. Did this shake your confidence? Are you done? Are you still?
Yeah, but you know, it was like.
Hey, by the way, this is why you were more confident as a poet. Nobody's throwing fucking cans of Bush beer at you.
Yeah.
I was Bush. Bye. Nope, no high five.
No.
Okay. Get it, Bush?
You're going to have to like go out and buy the Best of the Little Affair tonight. Just to you're going to have to retroactively.
Hey, man, I love Sarah McLachlan. Go on.
Yeah.
Actually, do listen to her on airplanes.
She's great. Yeah. It's really, great airplane
calms
music.
Calms me down. It's great. Oh, that song, second track on Surfacing. Yeah.
Yeah. Adia is fantastic. It is. It's great.
Yeah, sure. Adia. I always thought it was Adia.
Yeah.
Adia, I don't believe I've whatever. So now that we've won ourselves back over.
And the interesting thing is when you start, no one tells you this, but it doesn't matter how bad the first comics you see are, they look so great and polished because you don't know any better,
right? Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
I mean, weird. I love how I started because of how naive and dumb I was, and I made like I used the N-word in an all-black club like 6 months in,
really,
because I did it the day before the Bringer show and it killed, and I just figured I was like that
did
good. I got
no beer then. You were like the throw beer at me comic. Yeah. That was your thing.
I mean, they cut the mic on me when the opening of the joke was, so it's okay for white people to say the N-word, and they cut the mic, and I thought it was an accident, so I yelled the rest of the joke.
Oh, no. So you yelled the N-word?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Whoo. Mike Lawrence,
yeah.
what a crooked path you've covered. That's incredible. So you're getting your ass handed to you regularly. Emily Gordon told me in preparation to talking to you that you consider yourself as having an origin story, like a comic book person.
Yeah.
Is this part of your origin story? This is the bullying part before you're bit by the radioactive spider? Where are we in the origin story?
Let's see. The rocket ship still hasn't left Krypton.
Oh, you're still on?
Yeah.
Well, Krypton is dying and you're leaving?
New York is definitely Smallville. Which is Metropolis, but you know where I actually got my powers.
Smallville, which is the farm.
Yeah.
Okay, we're doing Superman.
And not the shitty show.
Not the shitty show, the farm where Superman lands. So you're still on Krypton.
Yeah.
And Krypton's a hard
and
place.
And crumbling and
it's
dying.
Crumbling. You got the N-word, you got lesbians. You got beer cans.
And this is all, like, all of this timeline that we're talking about, you know, working at McDonald's through all of this.
Yeah.
You know, I started poetry when I was 15. I started at McDonald's when I was 16. I went to college for 8 months in Virginia, but then went right back to McDonald's. I was in
They got the hook in you.
Oh, yeah.
They turn the golden arches upside down, attach it to a string, and fish for people like
you.
Oh,
yeah.
And they caught you. You worked at McDonald's.
7 years.
7 years at McDonald's, like Brad Pitt movie, but making Big Macs.
Yeah.
Terrifying and sad. Is it?
Yeah.
I'm sure some people listening to the show work at McDonald's, but I mean, like... Tell me what it was.
The best thing for comedy. It was the best preparation because... And it's definitely shaped my work ethic in an insane way where it's like... Nothing is beneath me. You do that, and there is... Because you do shows with other people, like, I can't believe I'm here. And I'm like, you don't know what actual fucking... indignity is.
Yeah.
You think getting heckled is bad? Try having someone yell at you when they don't even see your face.
Ugh.
And they...
You mean because you're cooking?
No, because you're in the drive-thru. You're talking to somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Can I help you? Yes. Like the horrible things that people do to these employees. If you take away anything from this podcast, don't be mean to those people. People get like such a high off it. I remember, remember Comics Comedy Club?
Yeah.
R.I.P. It was a great place.
Rest in peace.
But I remember they would have the downstairs, the Ochi's Lounge.
Yeah, Ochi's.
And there was a bathroom attendant there.
Yeah, I remember.
And there was so many.
That was Ochi.
Yeah. So many comedians would make fun of that guy.
Yeah, I remember that
and
too.
And it's just like, it's such a bad taste. Like,
yeah.
You know, the whole thing of like, you know, because comedians, we're in the service industry too.
Yeah, I
see. Comedy is the service industry.
Yes, I can see that.
You know, and... Those are our brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
The waiters of the world.
Oh, look at
you. You know, you have a shitty audience. They have shitty customers.
Right. So, yeah. God, that's kind of lovely, man.
Yeah.
How thoughtful. What did you, so you work the drive-thru.
Yeah.
And you...
I was the phantom of the drive-thru. I would write, when I started, I would write my jokes in the drive-thru. The joke that I did it on Oliver, my family tree has a car wrapped around it.
Yeah.
I wrote that when I saw a guy driving away with a bottle between his legs and a kid in the back seat.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
But
each one
kinda...
storytellers.
Yeah. You get out your guitar, and this one's called Jeremy.
That's the thing. In my head, like my sets are like Slumdog Millionaire. Every time I do a joke, there's like a flashback.
Yeah. Like, I thought for a second you were going to say you wrote the jokes on napkins and put them in the bags.
No.
So that guy would be eating it and be like,
what?
Well,
when I would do bringer shows at the Improv in Fort Lauderdale. They
bringer
would
show
like,
is where you have to bring audience members, paying audience members.
Yeah. I would put... You give the ticket and you get in for free. I would put tickets in the bags.
Really?
Yeah.
That's not bad.
Yeah. In the hopes somebody would go.
Oh my!
Because they give you like a stack of them. They're like, I gotta get these out there.
Oh jeez.
And
I feel like this is like Comedy Nerd 8 Mile. You're jotting little rhymes on the greasy napkins and stuff.
Yeah,
I guess everybody must. Is this the typical McDonald's question? Is it fucking disgusting? Would you eat there? I wouldn't eat there. I don't care what you say. I probably won't eat there. But would you not eat there?
I want to get to a point where...
And if there's some story like, oh, the old guy put his dick in the McFlurry, I don't want to know that. I'm just talking about literally as it is
I'm
meant
you,
to be
I'm
prepared.
You the answer. Yeah. I want to get to a point where I don't have to afford it anymore.
You eat it still?
Yeah. I ate it on Sunday. I was in San Francisco featuring, and I was downtown, and everything else was like $7, $8. For a buck, you get a hamburger. That was my dinner. Yeah, why not? That's the reality. I mean,
yeah, God.
It breeds itself. Like, the employees work there because they're poor, and people eat there because they're poor, and you know, obesity is obviously tied to poverty.
Yeah.
I mean, there were people, customers I saw there every single day.
Heavy users.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're like, they were the meanest people.
Well,
you know, there was a woman who would ask for her fillet of fish in a very specific way and was the most condescending person. And
she wanted it like well done, like crispy. Oh no! Wait, let's not never associate negativity with crispy.
Yeah.
She wanted it crunchy. Thank you. Crunchy.
She we would have to prepare it fresh. Fries, no salt. You know.
Oh my God!
It's like she would inspect it, and this was when you work at McDonald's, you have to sign a piece of paper that has all these different like a contract, and one of the things on there is that you do not accept tips.
Really?
Yeah.
It's in the contract.
Talk about kicking someone when they're down. Oh. It's already no one's going to tip you, but just in case.
Yeah, it's in writing.
Yeah.
Yikes. Fries, no salt? Because you want them fresh.
Yeah.
Isn't there sugar in the salt, too?
I mean.
I would be. You didn't read the labels?
I do have those. I've seen things that would blow your mind.
Yeah,
stories
yeah.
With the food. I mean, I saw people do stuff. I never did any of it, but I saw it. And it was mostly justified. Like, people would ask, like, you know, people would, like, because, you know, multiple people would hear the headset and they'd be like, what do you think? And I'd be like, You shouldn't, but I'm not going to stop you.
Oh, my God. Because they're being total douches.
Yeah, yeah.
Not just random anarchy.
Yeah, yeah.
Not just being mean to other people for no reason, but retaliation.
It's also that feeling that you are so...
It makes me so sad.
Invincible in your car.
Yeah.
It's such a culture thing.
That's interesting.
Like, living in New York, like, I forgot that. But just being in L.A. for a couple of days,
this
the power of the car, which is so terrible.
It's such a private space. That's what that explains road rage. That also explains things like Howard Stern, who I think is hilarious. But, like, they talk about really dirty sexual graphic things.
Yeah.
And it's okay because you're, like, in your little robot you.
It's a conversation you couldn't have with another person.
Exactly.
You can't go to work and have that conversation.
Right. And you can also just, like, fuck you. You know what I mean? Like, you're in your car. Fuck you. I'm in my robot. That makes total sense.
Yeah.
Why would you be mean to a McDonald's guy? Because you're drunk, maybe? And you're driving your kid around?
Because
you're an asshole?
Because
life isn't going so well?
Yeah, regardless of what happened to you. And all the shit you went through, thank God there's someone beneath you. That's it.
I actually think that's very interesting. Somebody was telling me recently that the main appeal of going to a strip club is to turn down girls. Is like, that's the feeling. Is you go, if you go to a strip club, all the girls want to give you a dance. That's their job. Yeah. And it's not the dances you get, it's the ones that you turn down that I think get some people off.
That has to be the appeal of watching comedy in a restaurant.
Ah, at least I'm not that guy.
You could just say what you want and fuck them, you know?
Oh, my God. Yeah. But you're right. Heckling and, like, trying to shit. Yeah. It's kind of a human need. Like, or you're looking for something and you can't find it other places. So you have to cut down your fellow man to make your dick hard.
I don't know how I feel about a lot of this stuff with, like, you know, culture and the internet, but the amount that we're able to openly criticize everything is very disconcerting to me.
Yeah.
That it's like...
You mean negative comments, blogs?
Yeah, that it's crazy to the point, like the Oscars this year, like, everyone had the revelation that the Oscars have always been bad this year.
Yeah. Yeah,
mainly because we've all found Twitter, but it's like
right.
They've always been bad, you know. But it's just like, and that we everything is meant to be torn down. Nothing can be sincere,
right.
Or sacred.
But
anymore.
That connects us, I suppose. If you and I are both tweeting, and I didn't tweet the Oscars, but if we were and we were shitting on it, isn't that kind of like a McDonald's version of community? Isn't that like a cheap, affordable, bad for you, but somehow immediately satisfying, but not long-term nutritional community where it's like, we both hate that bullshit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Billy Crystal looks like he's had some work done. High
five. You spent 3 hours watching it. You added to their, you know,
ad sales.
Viewership. Like, I remember there was like a joke I tried doing and it never hit. And I wish it had. It was like, I wish my grandma was a celebrity. That way, when she died, I can go on Twitter and not feel anything about it.
Oh, that's great. It is weird how when someone dies, Davy Jones just died.
Yeah.
Like, Twitter becomes this weird mausoleum, this weird cemetery where you just look at the worst.
I did it with Whitney. I did do some Whitney Houston. I mean, I get it in the sense, because I know I'm attacking it, but I defend it too in a sense, like, there is a cathartic thing about it. I mean, it is cool knowing that all these people. That's the thing about the internet is that you're not lonely anymore, but you're still alone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? It's like you're having these dialogues and interactions with all of these people, but it's not actual interacting.
It can be, I suppose, a cheap and I'm going to say my metaphor again, the idea that it's like a fast food connection sort of thing. When Whitney died, a lot of people did make jokes about that, and that's like simultaneously – It's disturbing.
Yeah.
It's also kind of weird. I have these thoughts where I read it and I'm like, it's weird that Twitter reminds us of people dying. And then that often makes me think about, like, oh, everybody dies. You know what I mean? Like, on a long enough timeline. We start, like, I remember Kumail and I were together when Heath Ledger died and we got a text. This is pre-Twitter. So it was like, oh, he's text-worthy. Like, he's a text person. When Michael Jackson died, someone texted.
I found out about Michael Jackson's death at an open mic when three comics in a row went up, and I was like, there must be something
wrong. Yeah, something's going on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's terrible when you see someone trending, a name, and you're like,
it's terrible when you get your news from comedy.
Yeah, no, that happens to me, too. That happens to me a lot.
I don't know what Casey Anthony did. I just know she's really attractive.
It's so funny that you say that.
I don't know if she's a murderer, but I heard she's a MILF. So.
Yeah, that's so funny. That's the version of the news that I get. They talk about getting it from The Daily Show. I get it from worse. I get it from people trying out new bits, not a staff of writers.
I get it from The Weekly Show, W-E-A-K-L-Y.
Is that a real thing?
No, just, you know.
You're doing a word play. Somebody, I had lunch with Jamie Lee, and she was telling me that you love wordplay, almost in that Mike Kaplan sort of way, that you'll open a joke with a quick throwaway word pun and then just do the joke. Yeah. Like, it's like a skill that you have. You like wordplay and puns.
Yeah, I love doing things like that. Like, just, yeah, I mean, it's also, you know, one of my favorite comedians is the Joker.
Yeah.
With the Riddler at a close. I love that old school kind of fun.
Yeah. That's hilarious. Who are your favorite comedians? The Joker, the Riddler. The Penguin has his moments.
You ever see that bit where he gets the two fairies and he gives them the explosive devices? It's a great bit. It's a great.
In The Dark Knight, I thought Heath Ledger did a really good job with not that good of a script. Like, his opening thing is ha 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 ha. He has to laugh like that, but he made that interesting choice to kind of.
Then you want to see like a scene where he's like, "You want to know how I got these scars?" And someone's like, "How'd you get them?"
Yeah.
Well,
you remind me of my father. I had to do it. I have to do my Joker impression whenever it comes up. Bring me back to the origin story, man. We have the trauma of the poetry rejection.
Yeah.
We have the trauma of your dad and the eyebrows. We have the trauma of your mom making comedy uncool. But you're still in Florida.
Yeah.
And now you're going to go to...
Working at McDonald's.
That's
right. In an almost five-year relationship with no sex.
This is the dude or the... No.
This is a girl.
This is a girl.
And then towards the end, you know, we were both like, oh, maybe we'll try something different. And I met this guy, Matthew, who was gay. And I broke up with him the day after Thanksgiving after meeting all of his family
stuff.
And it was.
Can I ask a weird question? It's a weird show. Was it too real? Like, you met the family and you're like, oh, I'm this guy's boyfriend? Did that kind of make it real for you?
That was a part of it. And it was also like, I realized that it wasn't something that, you know, I truly liked. I mean, but I didn't know that. I just wanted, you know, it's no different than, like, you know, doing the cancer joke at the lesbian bar, not knowing any better. But I think that's such obviously people do make mistakes that you can't recover from. Like I'm not saying, like, oh, go kill someone, you'll learn something about yourself.
Right.
But there has to be that part of life where you do just try everything.
How old were you?
When
you were dating a dude?
I was like 20.
20. So that's like a figuring it out sort of time, I suppose.
Yeah.
And this guy, was he crushed? You break up with him after meeting the
family?
It was
a part of – it was so sad because I broke up with him, and then I asked him to show me the bus on the way out of his life for the rest of it forever.
Wait, can you show me the bus schedule for out of your life? That is terrible. It says it on the front of the bus. A new relationship.
This way, last stop. God. Not you.
Oh, yeah. Jesus.
I mean, I went through so many, you know,
that seems kind of like
phases.
It seems kind of brave to me. I mean, you're this guy, you want attention. You're a comedian, so I'm guessing you want acceptance. So it seems kind of bold, I guess, to be like, maybe I'm gay, and going for it.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of people would be like, maybe I'm gay, I'm going to put that thought in the attic forever.
I mean, right, it was
next
literally
to maybe I want to try Ethiopian food. Not my favorite cuisine.
I wasn't sure if it was, you know, something for me until, like, you know, like he had, you know, he was, you know, he gave me the worst hand job ever.
Which is weird because I'd have to imagine, and I'm not even trying to be funny.
Oh, of course, that they would know
if
better.
If you have the equipment, yeah.
That's another, I think, difference between lesbians and gays thing. Like, lesbians, like, I know how to work it. But it was so aggressive. There was no delicacy to it.
Well, that must have been how he liked it, right?
Yeah.
Is he like, this is what I like? And he's like biting your arm.
And it just hurt. And I was like, you have to stop. And I turn over and we went to bed. And then I woke up and, you know, I was like, look, I gotta go.
Wait, you broke up with him the day after the worst hand job ever?
Yeah.
He gave you the you just met my family hand job?
Yeah.
And this wasn't the first hand job he had given you.
It was.
You met his family pre-hand jobs?
Yeah.
Had you done other stuff?
We'd made out.
Me? What? You don't? No. There has to be orgasms have to be had. Call me old fashioned, but if you're going to bring your gay boyfriend home with you, at least have gotten him off a couple times. Then he tried that night and failed.
Yeah.
Failed to do it for you, and you rolled over with confused 20-year-old blue balls and said, can you at least give me the bus schedule to clean up with?
Thor couldn't lift this hammer. What could I say?
Oh, my God. You had just made out, but you must have cared about him.
I liked him. He was a nice guy, and I felt bad about it.
Let me throw this your way. It sounds like he might have rushed the meet my family thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was just what.
How long had you been together? Or, you know, hanging out or making out occasionally?
It was like the second or third time I was over his place. The first time we went to see The Incredibles, and he kept trying to make out with me during it. And I was like, I just want to see this movie. It's a really great movie.
It is. It's one of my favorite
Pixar
movies.
Yeah, it's like, a great movie. Come on.
Yeah.
What if Brad Bird was there? You know, it's like, fucking ruin it for me. It was, you know.
Okay, so I thought you were in this relationship, a sexless gay relationship, and then met his family, and then broke
his
heart.
I was in a sexless female relationship.
How'd that go?
I mean, it was.
What do you?
I was so obsessive with her. I mean, to a point, like.
Is this you? Is this you? Like with your parents? I'm not going to put on my parents. You did something wrong. Did you do something?
You know, I did some things wrong. I mean, she was very standoffish, and it was weird because neither of us drove. So we had a long-distance relationship 15 minutes apart.
Oh, my God. God, you're like so many stories and comic books and movies. You're a crazy man. I love it. It's fantastic. A long-distance relationship 15 minutes. Why? Where's Fox Searchlight? Seriously, that is the log line of the movie called...
So Close and Yet So Far.
It's called Long Distance. Yeah. So Close and Yet So Far. That's fantastic. Because why couldn't she drive? What is the wacky... I mean,
I don't know. She just didn't. I mean... And
you have a medical reason, or at least a physical reason.
But I have to be honest, enough people have said to me, like I drove a car for the first time like 2 or 3 months ago when I was in Cleveland with.
That's where you want to do it if you're going to dabble. I don't think I can drive, but let's hit Ohio.
Yeah. If I'm going to run over someone, I want to make sure they're not doing anything with their life.
It's
victimless crime.
I meant open roads, cornfields. You went with murder of a human. A lot of Ohio listeners that I apologize to. No, Mike, keep it dark. Keep it crispy. Keep going. So you drove
recently. That's not crispy. That's burnt.
That is burnt. It goes back to filet of fish. Crunchy. Yeah. Tell me how you got into you dated her for 5 years? Is that what you said?
Yeah. And I met her through like a teen poetry thing. And
this is pre Heartbreak Boy?
Yeah.
This is – okay.
The Heartbreak Boy was during – with her towards the end. We both didn't know what we wanted.
Oh, that's right. You told me that. You were like, let's see if we do something else.
Yeah.
And you made a pretty bold move.
Maybe, you know, it's like, maybe the reason you're a terrible person to me is because I should be gay.
Maybe I'm gay. That's some fucking Al-Anon shit. It's like your fault. It's my fault that you're terrible to me. I should
she
be
with
men.
She was so mean. Like, but I was, you
is
know.
Is this part of your origin story, the mean girl?
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing was that I was too needy and she was too mean. And I would call her up all the time.
That's a nice closure.
She got grounded for a month because she got like a C on her report card. And I sent her letters every day, handwritten letters. And she would, you know, send me them too sometimes.
Terrible, terrible handwriting.
And just, But with them in the most like hyperbole, you know.
You were in love.
I was,
or you were obsessed.
And you know, the thing is, when you are first in love, you're not even in love with the person as much as you're in love with the idea of being in love.
Absolutely, man. Well put. Yes.
And that is the worst thing to put on another person because they are all your expectations. They are everything.
You didn't know this at the time.
No.
How could you? You're just obsessed. Like, it sounds a little codependent. Do you feel like you can be codependent?
I think so. I gotta say, even though we're talking about all this sad stuff and everything, I think I'm the happiest that I've ever been by far, and the most comfortable I've ever been, and a lot of that comes from going through all of this stuff and making all these mistakes and having to admit that I was wrong. I mean, because you do it in joke form as a way to appeal to other people, but you do have to go home and think to yourself, oh, wait, no, maybe I did fuck up. Like, it's the hardest, especially the comedians are so egotistical and self-centered, and they always play the victim, but it's like, no, we're the asshole sometimes.
Yeah, sure. I mean, this comes up on the show from time to time, but something that really helped me in my marriage is I was like, oh, I definitely fucked up. My wife didn't, like, leave me. I didn't give her what she needed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or in my own silly way, I was in love with the idea of us being married and together, kind of like what you're saying. And that's not giving somebody what they need.
Yeah.
So you weren't necessarily giving this girl what she needed.
Yeah, it's so shitty when you hear, like, comics talk about, like, I remember I talked to this guy about, like, and I the girl that I'm with now, Adina, we'll be together 2 years in May. We live together.
Great Rancid song, Adina.
Oh, nice.
Opening track of the self-titled CD. It's great song. Katie, play the song? I'm just kidding.
That's no different than any reference I've made tonight.
That's true. Yeah, I just have a different dork area.
Yeah, same language, different dialect.
That's true. Yeah. Oh, God, I'm speaking Portuguese. You're speaking Spanish.
Yeah.
Go on.
So, but yeah, it's that whole thing. Like, I remember I was talking to this comic, and I feel like a spokesperson for when you actually find love through a dating website, you feel like a spokesperson. Like, no, it does work. I mean, look at me. I'm a terrible person.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, so I was talking to this guy.
Which one?
What, OKCupid?
I was going to guess OKCupid.
Yeah.
That's what people do. Go on.
OKCupid. Let's see what you got. Okay. And I also attacked online dating the same way that I attacked. Like, I would go on date after date after date after date until I found the person for me. I would do an open mic, then a date, which was basically a romantic open mic, and then a date.
You know? Are you kidding? I mean, another show.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That goes back to your kind of addiction. You're really going for it.
When I moved to New York, I used to work at a hot dog place, and I would go.
No, I'm sorry. On your resume, was it based on McDonald's? Where you're like, I've worked in the fast food. Yeah. I'm not even joking.
No, you were kind of like, of course, yeah,
yeah, of course, okay, great.
So I go. I would go during my shift to a mic and then run back.
Really?
Yeah.
Like,
that's how. Yeah.
Wow, man, you're insatiable.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it's paying off. I really am. It sounds like we're wrapping up, but I'm not. But I'm glad it's paying off.
I mean, I remember the first time, you know, the first week I did Gut Bucket, and I did great. And it was another thing of, like, I had no idea who anybody was. I was new to the city. And there were a lot of great comics on that show.
Yeah.
And to me, there were just other open, like Baron Vaughn was on and a few other guys I just don't remember right now.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, they're like, oh, we're all just open micers together.
Right.
And I remember I went back the next month and I got on again and I didn't do as well. And then I went back the next 5 months. And every time I'd see my name not on there, and I felt like you take it so personally, like you're being punished. And I was like, why did I have to have a mediocre set the second time? And I thought that one set was the reason that I was being denied the city.
Really?
But I just wasn't ready anyway.
Interesting, man. I thought you were going to say that we did put you on, because we would rig that a little bit.
Yeah.
Gut Bucket.
And it wasn't.
I have memories of putting you on, of making sure you would get on.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, and I actually, this is bizarre because I don't typically remember anything, but I remember your second set wasn't as good, and there was zero part of me that was like, well, fuck that guy. That's a one-hit
wonder.
And
I thought that was the city telling me, like, oh, you thought. Like, I went from being like a capital city goofball to a dancing homer.
It's just good reference.
And it was just like, nope, I'm not.
Squeeze the wheeze.
Yeah. And it was so heartbreaking. And I moved in January. By March, I was looking to teach school in Korea. I had already thought I was done.
Really?
Because of that Gut Bucket.
Jeez, man, that's putting a lot of pressure on guys like me. Only it's helpful.
I ran a mic the woodshed, and we would rig the fuck out of that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I did the same thing to people.
Sure. Isn't that crazy? I have to pump the brakes all the time and be like, this is really important to people. We didn't. It was random, mostly. Yeah. We would take some people and be like, we got to put these people on, then would do the drawing. You know what I mean? It was, I'm going to say it was 80% random.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
it's one of those things, but regardless, it's like, there, you know, that is that superhero thing of like needing to believe that someone else was the reason for it or whatever. It's like, no, the reason that everything ended up being fine was that I didn't just invest everything in that one mic. I just kept getting up anyway. It's like when people get rejected from an audition or something, it's like you decide how that defines you. Mm-hmm. You know, you could let it defeat you, or you could just be like,
well, that I think that's the overarching thing that I would like to talk to you about is this tenacity. Yeah. This sort, like, I get a lot of emails and I get a lot of people listening to the show who are talking about starting comedy, and I get a lot of people that like will do one or two shows and then they're just like, well, I can't be doing this. And you're this guy who's like kind of the equivalent of sleeping in your car, leaving your hot dog shift to do it,
yeah,
getting your ass handed to you, bottles thrown at you, mic shut off.
I passed out on an open mic once because I hadn't had food. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. If I had to, if it was a $5 open mic, I would spend my last $5 on the mic. That was just, I mean, and some of that comes from my mom, that, you know, my mom already had kids when she started. She never gave it 100%. And I said to myself, when I come to New York, I'm going to give this everything because I wanted to know. Because I know so many people who failed,
mm-hmm,
and they have every excuse. Well, you know, I never really truly did it. I wanted to know that if I failed, it was my fault.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to be able to blame anyone else. And, you know, I wanted to know, I did 15 mics a week. I did this, and nothing happened. Maybe I just suck. And then it would be okay to go on to the next thing.
Right. It's not for you.
Yeah.
If that were to happen. But then some things did start. What was your first kind of break thing?
I think...
You did John Oliver. Was that the first thing?
Yeah. I mean, Montreal was the year before, and I think that was a break. I think it was like individual sets that were a break. I think the first, like the 50 first jokes, like in 2009, where like, mm-hmm, 50 comics went up, and I think I remember having a really great set on that. And that kind of helped. But I also, you know, but I've always had that level of humbleness, too. I've never been like, when is my turn? It's like, I don't mind.
That's great.
Still doing mics.
You're keeping
stuff.
Your head down.
It's just, yeah, it's just like, that's what I do, I think.
And be funny.
But now it's a point, I mean, and this is where like the intervention part comes in.
Yeah, let's get back to that.
Is that, I mean, I have to be honest, and it's taken a lot of soul searching. Like, my birthday is in January, mm-hmm, so it's like, and, you know, your birthday is a time where you, you know, evaluate your life, and so is New Year's. So they're back to back.
Oh, yeah,
of
yeah,
all
yeah,
this
yeah,
nonsense.
Yeah.
It's like, it's January 14th, so it's just 2 weeks of nonstop, and I've had, like, multiple guys be like, you know, the same thing that happened at the poetry, like, you gotta stop.
Yeah.
Because...
Well, let's talk about that, Mike.
Yeah.
I don't know... If I'm a big believer, I don't have a show tonight. I could definitely have booked a show tonight.
Yeah.
I love not having shows because for me, it's about working and then it's about letting it breathe. It's almost like those recovery days. If you work out really hard, you need that day to let your muscles grow. And also, I just can't, if I do a joke too many times, I'll get tired of telling it, sort of thing. It starts to make it more difficult to sell. I can't get inside the joke.
Yeah.
So it'll like strip some of the paint off of it for me. But then it also just comes down to, and I know I've said this before, take a shot, the idea that you need to live a life worth commenting on. Because once all your sets are about getting to that fifth mic of the night, you've lost a little relatability.
And that happened. And I think, you know, being with Adina has definitely helped that. It's, you know,
what does she do?
She's documentary.
Oh, that's right. She's doing the Holocaust.
You know what the most important thing as a comedian sometimes is asking someone else how their day is.
Interesting.
You know, and just, you know, like, and what Adina does, and it's so great, and I never had anybody do this, because comedians just feed each other, because if they admit that you're wrong, then they're admitting that their behaviors are wrong, too, that are similar. So I would say, like, because, you know, we love the world of exclusivity where it's just like, oh, but, you know, as a comedian, she's like, no, as a person, you know, mm-hmm, she'll always be like, I'll be like, well, you know, as a comedian, you just have to go out there and prove yourself. She's like, yeah, because I don't have to do that in the film world, you know?
Right.
She's like, why do you always have to make it this thing about just you and
that
your
is,
own
there's
path?
There's a safety to that. It's like, I know I'm emotionally unavailable, but I'm in my head a lot because I'm writing jokes.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you're an asshole.
Yeah.
I've had to do that.
If I wasn't a shitty person to you, I couldn't be a funny person. No, there's lots of nice guys. I mean, that's...
Yeah. That's absolutely true. I've been trying to take down the wall between comedian and other people a lot on this show. It happened. At the beginning, I think it's very funny to refer to non-comedians as civilians, but I also think it was inappropriate because there are a lot of people.
It's basically
we're
like
all going through
the whole muggle thing. Like,
yes, exactly.
A bunch of fucking muggles. I'm
exactly.
Like, no, I mean...
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
Or those aliens in District 9.
Yeah, like watch a movie and not think about how you should have written it.
Yeah,
every once in a while,
and like, don't riff on it. Just watch it.
Yeah, there's like.
Well, but here you're saying that, but how does that blend into your 15 mics? Is Adina trying to get you to pull back a little bit?
Yeah, and she has.
Yeah, don't you like it?
Yeah, it's been tough though because the truth is I don't drink and I don't smoke, and that's a lot of comedy. People love going out and getting drunk and smoking.
Yeah.
And they love talking about their careers. And the one thing that I love more than anything in stand-up is stand-up. And that's where it really comes from. Because people say to me, oh, you just go to these mics to be the big guy. It's like, it has nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
This is the only thing in comedy that makes me happy.
You like, want to go for a jog.
I've tried working on pilots and all that. And, you know, and.
Well, we're doing long distance, right? I mean.
Yeah.
Oh,
we just got to get the rights to Salisbury Hill. Yeah.
Mike Lawrence.
Pack your bags. I'm going to take you home. 15 minutes away. Out there in the distance. From which I could see from my block.
You can see the girlfriend that
the
you can't
get to. The path of least resistance. You never saw my cock.
Wow, that just went from family comedy to R-rated. Yeah. R-rated.
Yeah.
We got to get back to how you didn't
that
have
sex. That went from Weird Al to what happened to Weird Al's parents.
I don't know what happened to Weird Al.
They died. Carbon monoxide poisoning.
Oh, Jesus. You? Yeah. What are you, the host of the show? I'm supposed to make it weird. Yeah. Oh, God in heaven.
You know, he performed that night. Like, you imagine the speech that he must have given. Like, Mama and Pop Pop would have wanted it this way. Now put me in the fat suit.
Oh, my God. Well, maybe he's not. I'm actually not trying to defend Weird Al or bring it back, but here I'm doing
There's
both.
All these
maybe movies. He loves the performance. Maybe he's like you. I've done shows nights I've broken up with girlfriends. I've done shows. I did a show very soon after my wife left me. In fact, the morning after she told me that she was having an affair, I had a very good general meeting at an agency.
Yeah.
Like, I was able to just kind of shut it
Thank
out of my
God
mind.
She didn't stay, right? I love when people put those two together. It's like, man, you know.
There's so many fucking interesting things happening. I want us to stay on. Adina getting you off the hooch.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
Well, it was like, I remember there'd be times where, you know, like there's like a Saturday mic at the Creek in the Cave, which is a great, you know, comedy theater. And I would be like, so can I just like go and then come back? She's like, no. She's like, why don't we do something? She's like, why do you... And no one had ever sat, like, because your friends could sit you down, but someone that you, like, truly love with the outside perspective could say things to you, and they seem so much more sincere because there's no ulterior motive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, that is one of the better things about, like, just having a girlfriend, especially when that's not a comedian, is that your victories get to just be victories, and your failures just get to be bad days.
Yeah.
You know, they are these, like, isolated incidences. Like when, you know, I found out, like, I was going to do Oliver, you know, you can't tell another comedian that and have it be a beautiful moment because there's that.
Right now. I remember where you are now. If, like, you know, stick at it. I'm just trying to encourage you in that it gets better sort of way. I can call Kumail and be like, I got this thing.
Oh, yeah,
and he'll be happy for me and vice versa. And it's genuine. It's not me being like, oh, that's great, man.
And there are people who do. I mean, it was like.
But I understand. You have this non-comedian girlfriend who doesn't judge your bad day as like, Mike's done. And doesn't judge your victory as like, Mike's made it and is a threat now. She just sees it for what it is.
Yeah. And it's all like having her in the green room that night and all that just as an encouraging presence.
Yeah.
It was great. I mean. It's just that putting it all in perspective, because you, I mean, I think that's the most.
She's trying to make you into a little bit more of a human.
Yeah. That's the most harmful thing about doing so many mics is that you lose perspective sometimes. You think that everyone's seen your jokes. You think that everyone knows who you are.
Right.
Like, and I've always, like, tried to distance that, like, because, like, I'll go up, and if I have a new McDonald's joke, I'll always open it with, so I worked at McDonald's for 7 years. Even though everyone in the room knows that, not everyone at a show does. And the more I'm in that mode, the healthier it is.
I understand, yeah.
You don't want to get to a point where it's like previously on
right.
Mike Lawrence.
You don't want to become the local open mic sensation who doesn't even have to set it up and be like, so here's what's going on with Tina. People are like, woo, woo, but no one else knows who the fuck Tina is.
I remember like one of the happiest moments of my life was when Oliver aired, and I watched it at Cabin, where they have a show in New York City. And all these comedians like watched it with me, and like, you know, they were like all cheering and stuff. And that moment was like, it was good. And the moment where like I literally like just broke down and started crying was I walked outside and I went on Twitter and I looked up all the comments of people who were like, who is this guy? I've never heard of him.
Yeah.
And it made me realize that the world is so big, and there's like, I've been in this small little bubble and breathing that same stale air. And it's like, I have so much more.
You were like a lab rat.
And, you know, running for someone wheel. Who, you know, and it's like those attempts, you know, at the theater in high school were fake. But I was genuinely suicidal for many years, you know, working at McDonald's in this relationship with someone who who didn't, I mean, it didn't truly, you know, love
me. And
was
mean to you.
I remember when we'd already broken up, and I asked her to come to a show, and she was like, you were never funny when we were together. Why would you be funny now?
Yeah, what is that?
So to go from
that, what is that?
Like,
I'm also interested why you would stay to that. What part of us, what part of just, not just performers, everybody that kind of thinks on some level they deserve someone like that. Like, she kind of reflects some voice in your head that might have been saying something similar. You know what I'm saying?
I mean,
like, you stayed with her for a pretty while, a long time.
Yeah, and I also saw Ghost Rider 2 on Sunday. It's
you make mistakes, is what you're saying.
But it's all the inability to let go. I'm gonna, you know, last year's WrestleMania sucked. I was like talking, you know, with my buddy Dan St. Germain. I was like, oh man, I can't wait for this year's Mania. And he's like, yeah, we have this conversation every year, Lawrence, you know, and it's like,
not a bad Dan St. Germain.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, but the journey's okay. Like, I saw the Avengers trailer today. And all I'm thinking is, like, you know what? Even if the movie sucks, that's fine. What about these months leading up to it, you know, that I've been happy?
That you want to look forward to it.
But, of course, if it does suck, I'm going to be the most miserable person to be around.
Yeah. So you can't let go. That's the girlfriend. You couldn't let go of the girlfriend.
And these open mics, it's been hard letting go.
And that made you cry. I was saying that you're like a lab rat, and you're running on the treadmill, that like the rat treadmill. And then when your John Oliver aired, suddenly you kind of saw your first like open field, and you were like, oh, man.
Yeah.
This skill that you've been working on, this superpower that you've been cultivating – you can take it out there and hopefully make other people laugh who do need to be told that you worked at McDonald's for 7 years.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
That's opportunity.
And it's been cool. Like, in, I mean, it's been a weird thing too. Like,
God, I really want you to not eat at McDonald's, man. Do you know how much I'm rooting for you?
I'm probably going to be dead in my early 40s. There's no way I'm not. My diet, I don't eat any vegetables. Like, it's bad. Like, I'm still a child.
We got to work on that.
I made $11,000 last year, you know?
Yeah, we got to.
But it was my first year that I made my living. Yeah.
You filed the taxes comedian.
Well.
What? Performer?
I didn't.
Uncle Sam is a listener. Oh, Jesus. MC Hammer over here.
I mean,
Wesley Snipes over here.
Yeah.
I need a third guy who didn't.
If anyone who's been listening to, like, the first, like, hour of this is like, I'm still going to take what's left of that guy. I don't think
somebody who likes you enough to listen past the hour point, but doesn't like you enough to report you to the federal government. That's an interesting person.
I want to believe that the IRS agent is the guy that I dumped.
Always
comes back.
Here, if you want to write off a 1099 for that hand job I gave you.
You know, I was 15 minutes away from you, and I did drive. You know, you could have had it all.
Okay, how did you – let's talk a little bit more about that relationship. Adina sounds great.
Yeah.
I'm not even – I'm guessing she gives a better HJ.
Yeah. A happy juxtapositioning?
Juxtapositioning. Yeah. She's always putting things beside by side.
Yeah. No, she's fantastic. Yeah, I love her.
How long have you been together?
If my parents had created a good – image of what marriage is, I think I could marry her someday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They divorced young.
Yeah.
So that's got to put a little damp in things.
Yeah.
I suppose. But you've been together how long? Did you already?
It'll be 2 years in May.
2 years in May.
And I moved in March. We have like a couple other roommates, but it's like a big place, and it's
another show. Fox Searchlights presents. Jeez, man, your life is so interesting. Yeah. What is the next goal? What are you trying to? You seem like a goal guy. You have some sort of board with Polaroid pictures tacked to it, and like you with Conan. Aren't you doing Conan?
No, I mean, I'm applying.
Oh, for some reason, I thought you had been about to do Conan.
No.
Well, you should know that. I mean, the subtle encouragement that I just was like, oh, yeah, that's about right.
Yeah. I appreciate it. Yeah,
that's good.
I think it'll happen. I mean, I don't, you know, it's...
On a long enough timeline, it will happen.
Yeah.
You just want to see how many Filet-O-Fish do you have to put down between now and that Conan, because that's going to be like, I don't know what it is.
It's funny because there's like a very, like... There's been like a lot of respect and joy, and I appreciate that. But there is some resentment towards me. Like the way that you are looking at me as someone that eats McDonald's is the way like a disgruntled atheist looks at a Christian. Like, it's kind of.
Oh, you feel me judging you?
Yeah.
No way.
Where it's like that comforts you?
No.
You know that's not real fish.
I'm glad you're. I'm glad. I think it's got to be whitefish, right? It's got to be one of the tilapia.
The kind that are easiest to multiply. Bring it back to religion.
I'm glad you're addressing that because that's not what I'm feeling at all. And often my face will betray me and default to a wrong expression.
Yeah.
What I'm feeling as you're talking is I've always been like, we need to have some sort of comedy scholarship. You're a funny guy. And if you're seeing me judging something, it's McDonald's and the injustice of someone being talented and spending his last $5 on an open mic instead of a meal, that fucks my shit up. Yeah. It really does. I have no – I'm being – there's no reason to not be honest.
Yeah.
I have no judgment to you. I'm genuinely rooting for you. And I'm sitting here being like, fuck me for having $25 in my
wallet
or whatever.
But there's the thing, too. Like, I mean, the blame that I'll put on myself is – there are times I
do hate McDonald's.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'm such a food snob. I have nightmares that I'm eating at McDonald's. Fuck me forever for saying that.
Nah.
I saw Fast Food Nation. It scares me.
Yeah. Mm. No. It's just interesting.
Go on.
It's funny how like I'm so personal about me. You do not talk about my people that way.
Yeah. No, I feel that.
Yeah.
Well, no, I get called out on shit and judgment and looking down all
but
the
I know,
time.
I mean, I don't want to paint myself as the victim when it comes to like me being poor and I went to this and that. It's like there are moments like I could have gotten a better job. You know,
mm-hmm.
Like my parents did make me graduate college before I moved to New York. Like 3 weeks after I got the degree, and I haven't used it. That's my fault.
Yeah, but it's also like you're a comedian, man.
No, I know.
No, but I just mean like it's just in your blood.
Yeah,
all of that stuff. I've said this. Oh God, I quote myself all the time. I've said this many times. Every story that we have of eating shit, or you literally passing out, or the bottles in the lesbian bar, and all that sort of stuff. That stuff is treasure. Like, and I'm sitting here wondering what I can do to like help not just you but everybody like you. I wish there were some sort of fund because it's like it's almost too much. It's hard for me to think about you doing that because I do feel a kinship and I feel like a fraternity and a brotherhood and I'm like, fuck man. I had my wife working when I was doing the open mic. So I had money, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a little bit of money to go to those shows.
It's
eat
weird.
A meal.
Yeah, I mean I eat pretty regularly now. But like Adina, she has a 9-to-5, and you know, and it's so weird because like I do feel insecure sometimes because you know she'll wake up. Sometimes I'll wake up like to kiss her, you know, goodbye, and you know we'll g-chat each other, and she'll be like, "What are you doing today?" And I don't. Sometimes I don't know what to say. You know, like. Just getting there.
But that is what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I would actually offer, this is a little off topic, but that killing time and downtime and learning how to manage yourself when you're alone is one of the required skills of being a comedian.
Oh, definitely is.
And you get better at it. I'm better at it now, like 11 years in. If I'm in a city alone, I know what to do. I know how to be healthy. I know how to stay active. I know how to work a little bit, just a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it was because of those days where my ex would be out working and I'd be thinking of her fucking slinging it, working it hard, and me at home just kind of killing time and playing video games. I'm also giving my brain some time to – see, that's our thing.
Yeah.
I'm going, I'm a comedian. I'm not just playing video games. I'm thinking of ideas in the back of my brain. But I am.
Yeah, for me, like, I what helps me is I love, like, I love fun shit. Like, my favorite show is Glee.
Really?
I'm a huge Glee. Yeah, I love Glee. I love reading – you know, I still love reading comic books. Like, I'm always at shows and mics reading comic books and stuff. Like, I do need to decompress from this world. It does get exhausting sometimes, and I do feel like I'm in a weird transitional part of my career where I will always love those first few years and those hungry years and the starving and scraping and I mean and I'm slowly getting out of there, but I'm distant enough from it to revere it and because I do think it has made me a better person. It
and it's making you a better comic too.
Yeah,
there's an urgency behind it.
But you know, but the most important thing was when I admitted to myself that it's like I'm the reason I'm going to these things. That it's like it's not, you know,
wasn't handed to you at all.
No,
you mean going to like things like John Oliver?
Well, no, I mean like the mics and stuff.
Oh, I see,
like,
I see.
Like that's that. Like, because I am slowly doing less of them. Like, I've been saying, you know, this is like the third time. Like, I don't drink anymore, Pete, I swear.
Yeah.
But like that, I have been doing less because the main thing is, you know, you can't be at open mics as much anymore when you just get so mad at the open micers. And like, and there was a thought in my head like recently. I was like, oh man, this guy's so fucking terrible. It's like they're babies.
Yeah.
That's their lesbian bar.
Yeah.
They have to crawl. See, they have to do all that. That's their, and you know, who am I?
It's always so challenging, man, when I see compassion and grace in other people. It always makes me want to be more compassionate and graceful.
Like, you know, like I get so angry at them. I'm like, you know, there was a comic, you know, when I did that lesbian bar, it was like, oh, there's this open mic called the Mental Ward, and it was a comedy-based open mic, and that was the first comedy mic I went to. And if it wasn't for that guy telling me that, you know, I don't know. I would have just kept going to the Chocolate Moose.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and I met people there. I met, you know, Al Jackson, who's a great comic, and he was the one who was like,
oh, I know Al.
Yeah. You got to move.
Yeah. Isn't it funny, the guy that tells you that you have to move and when you have to move and the way that we kind of shape each other and help each other. That goes back to the McDonald's thing, because I'm looking for the equivalent of me telling you have to move. But I can't say it. You know, there's no easy thing for me to say. I just want you to, like, I want some ships to come.
I mean, I think when things get a little better, you know, I'll stop eating at McDonald's when I can afford to. That's what I said at the beginning.
Yeah. That's right.
You know?
And it's not just McDonald's. If people listening love McDonald's, I'm just talking
food,
about, I'd like you to be able to eat at McDonald's because you'd like to eat at McDonald's, not because you have to eat at McDonald's in San Francisco when you're middling because you make, like, I don't know, not enough money.
But it's also when you... I mean, that's the difference. When you headline, you can eat what you want. When you feature, it's
a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, I love, you know, like, I mean, John Oliver's been great to me. I did, like, you know, 13 to 15 dates with him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, that's the stuff right there. Yeah,
and I mean, he's the best. He's the sweetest, kindest guy.
You will die alone.
Yeah.
In a cold,
dark room. Yeah. But it's been, like, I mean, watching him, like, not just as a comedian, but as a person, like... He recently got married, and it's like, you can make it work. Like, people need to believe that there are only failure stories, or that in order to be successful, you have to give it up, that there's this, like, thing of, like, you have to throw it all out. No, you don't. Like, that's a guy who's found a way to do what he loves, politics and comedy. He reads the New York Times and is, you know, often listening to, like, a comedy podcast or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he's found a way to make his life about that, but have a great woman that he loves. And it's like, and it can work. And it's like, those are the examples we should be talking about, not the, and then this guy went here, and then he went here. And then, like, it's so many.
And he died alone.
I mean, there's so many of these guys who are, like, in their, you know, 40s and 50s who are performing in front of children every night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, you know, if they go to, like, their high school reunion or a dinner party, they have nothing to say because they don't know that actual world anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So they go and they make a 20-year-old laugh at the UCB. And it's like, you can't have both.
Yeah, that's interesting. That well, I think we covered relationships real good, and we're kind of nearing the back three. I don't know. That's not an expression.
Yeah.
Well, I was moved just then by your grace and compassion, which is wonderful to see, and your love for other comedians and your understanding.
I'm a huge proponent for comedian rights, and
so am I. That's what I'm feeling.
Now here's an interest, like, because there's been this recent thing of, like, you know, people blogging about other comedians and tweeting about other comedians,
yeah.
And it just puts such a sour taste in my mouth, because. Like, there are the actual issues that we need to be fighting that nobody is. You know, like, Alexandro tried unionizing a few years ago. I think they're doing the comedy fund now. But it's like, why aren't we bitching? Like, why are you bitching about what show you're not on and not about the fact that you don't have health care? You know,
right.
Like, actual real adult things.
Yeah.
Like, how many times have you done a show where someone was making money at the door and you weren't?
Yeah,
and
I was.
No
just,
one
was,
ever tweets about that.
Yeah, I was just talking to somebody.
You
about
know,
that.
This guy will fuck you over. Don't go. But it's he had a bad set. Like, why?
Yeah,
you know?
it's almost keeping us kind of.
In the end, all we have is each other.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's like this is such an old business in the way it's still based on apprenticeships.
Yeah,
it's no different than being a blacksmith. You know?
I was going to say cobbler. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
We're basically cobbling.
Like every,
and like John Oliver is your like master cobbler.
Yeah, everything that I've gotten has been because someone believed in me, and everything that you've gotten has been the same way.
Yeah,
someone
yeah.
took a chance.
Someone
on
took
you.
A chance.
You know, I'm on this show right now because he said maybe he will be interesting, but it is still that organic and natural.
Right. It's absolutely true. It's a meritocracy.
I want everyone that's listening to this to know we don't have the same manager.
Ah, oh
that's
my.
Not why I'm on. But
you're on the show because you asked to do the show, and then I was like, I know Mike's really funny. I said that.
Yeah.
And then I asked Emily. I said, would Mike Lawrence be good on the show? And then she was like, absolutely. He says life is really interesting.
She's like, he always makes it weird. No.
Well, she actually did say that is a consideration. She's like, he'll definitely make it weird. And I was like, okay, done. And then Jamie Lee was like, he's funny on other podcasts. So there was a little pedigree, a little check, a little background check. Because initially I was like, what's true was we were booked up.
Oh, I know.
I did a background check. I asked people around. So you're absolutely right. And then I was like, I'm patting myself on the back a little bit, but I was like, that could help. That could help you. People hear the show.
Yeah.
People will check you out, and that's exciting. Now let's bring it to God because we're going to wrap this up. But before we do, let's see.
And by the way, just you explaining that just shows nothing's ever come easy for me. I wasn't just handed this.
That's true.
But well, I don't mind that.
You're right. People like, probably would think we had the same manager.
Like, I feel – I mean, that's the thing is that – I mean, I'm like a little over 6 years in. And there are thoughts sometimes like, oh, I could have, you know, I could be doing more. But I feel like everything has worked out. Like, I think that, like, Oliver was the best debut that I could have had at the TV set. I couldn't be happier than that. Everyone loves ripping apart their TV sets. That was the best.
Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah.
I was sick and I was getting liquored up afterwards, although stand-up is my favorite part of stand-up, too.
Yeah.
I feel all guilty. But I was so sick that I was like, maybe if I start drinking, I'll feel better. And it totally worked. And I was at that bar at the Soho House, I think.
Yeah.
And you were there. And I was like, fucking A, man. Mike Lawrence from Gut Bucket just did the same TV show as me, which was a great moment.
And they put me on third.
That's right. Oh, did they?
Yeah.
That's your number, man.
Yeah.
You should get a hat with a three on it. I don't know why, but you should. Well, let's wrap it up with God. I'm interested because picking up on compassion and picking up on your heart and all that sort of stuff, that doesn't necessarily need to tie back to a religion. But I am interested in your beliefs about like morality and religion and how you were raised.
I a lot of my beliefs comes from, you know, my years of working at McDonald's and the whole thing of...
Not a surprise at all.
See,
that's what I wanted to talk about. I've talked to other people and sometimes their belief in God is tied to their success. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're like, things are so great. It's really easy to believe in God when you're flying first
class.
And
that means Hitler was the best fucking Christian there was.
What do you mean?
That like... Hey, look, I got the chancellorship so quickly,
oh,
and
that's
like
true.
Everyone's doing what I'm saying, you know.
Yeah. I mean, he got what he was going after.
Yeah, I think to me, it's
how does religion and McDonald's mix?
I don't like labeling myself as an atheist or an agnostic or anything. I And I used to be... You know what's interesting is I'm much more for religion since I moved to a place where people were so proud to oppose it at every single step.
You mean New York?
Yeah. And just shit on people and rip them apart for no other reason that they had beliefs. Because in Florida, it's easy to be an atheist because it's power. You know, like I was telling you, like I didn't know who I was and, you know, the whole poetry thing. Saying that you didn't believe in God when you were in middle school was a weapon. And you went from being a nobody to a fucking powerful asshole. Telling someone there is no Santa Claus times a thousand.
Yeah.
And I loved having that. And then...
Santa Claus or God?
It's funny.
Or the powerful asshole tool.
The best way to realize that what you've been doing is wrong is just seeing someone else do it and... And just being like, oh, God, that's what I look like, you know? Like,
yeah.
I mean, you know, because, I mean, I do have compassion towards other comedians, but there have been moments, you know, like I'll make fun of comedians. I'm known for that, like being an asshole, like making fun of comedians on stage. And I think it's always come from a warm place, but seeing other comics, you know, do it sometimes has made me, like, regret some of the things I've done. And I think that's a good thing about religion is, you know, that there is regret, that there is self-analysis. And
that's really interesting. Just today I was thinking, I was like, well, how would I raise my kids? And then I was like, the one thing from religion that I do enjoy that it instills in you is a type of thoughtfulness. It might be like a weird supernatural thoughtfulness where you're like, what will God think of this? But it does give you that little half beat of like, instead of like me hitting you with a rock or whatever, I'm kind of like, should I do, like, even if it's artificial, let's say there is no God, it's still making me pause and think of a pretend God and being more mindful of my actions.
Yeah. I look at God the same way that I look at like Tyler Perry or Dane Cook, even if we want to tie this all together, is that anyone who like shits on those things, it's like, well, what is your alternative to entertaining that person? You know, and they're like, oh, man, these fucking Tyler Perry movies are the dumbest thing. I'm like, well, are you appealing to that audience?
Yeah.
You know, it's like with religion, it's like, you know, I worked with people who I am so thankful that they had God, because if they didn't, they would have nothing.
I understand that.
You know, and the things that I saw and the breaking points, you know, we all bitch about our lives. Like, you talk about not getting booked, lose your fucking son in a car crash, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the real things that, you know, really, like, rock you. And hearing those things, people who fell from grace, people who did drugs, ex-convicts. I saw everything at McDonald's. And, like, thank God there was some kind of safety net. There was a guy that I worked with named Gerald Stebner, which is, like, such a Vonnegut name.
I love it. But Stebner walked into the bar.
Yeah, Stebner and Kilgore. No. But he would, he worked three jobs. He worked at Ruby Tuesday, which I don't know if that's like a steak chain or whatever. Yeah.
Good salad bar.
And Pizza Hut and McDonald's. And he would always wear the uniform of the next job. He worked the morning shift at McDonald's. He would wear like the Pizza Hut uniform underneath his shirt. And the one day
he
that
just stripped down like Superman.
Six days a week. The one day he didn't work was Sunday,
because he was religious.
Yeah,
and that was his thing.
And the cynical asshole would be like, "Well, that's because he believed in God. He had such shit." Like, no, that was the one thing that, you know, like, he would go with his family. He'd be a father and he'd that be a Christian. Yeah. And that was
his Adina, kind of. It took him away from the 15 mics a day.
Well, he also had a wife, but that was his Adina.
Yeah, yeah, but I'm just saying it was kind of humanizing him, slowing him down and doing a practical service. I guess the problem comes in like Dane Cook and Tyler Perry. You were just challenging me to think about that. I was like, I guess those guys are selling their own kind of truth. Religion is selling one kind of truth, and Dane Cook is selling another kind of truth, and both of them might not be completely true, but like, we all enjoy participating in something that we are choosing is true.
Or even like Larry the Cable Guy or Jeff Dunham or like some of these, you know, broader comics that we think of, that we love to shit on. It's like, you're not writing jokes that would entertain those people.
Yeah.
You know?
So kind of let them have it.
So it's like, you're going to give them shit for liking this thing. Like, first of all, We're in such a bust in comedy. Thank God people are going to see any fucking thing.
Yeah.
And you're going to give them shit for that. But then it's like, you're going to give them shit if they don't laugh at your Fraggle Rock joke.
Yeah.
You know? You guys just don't get me. It's like, no. Yeah. I mean, I remember when I would work at McDonald's, and I was like big into the Oscars, like, you know, a few years ago. And I watched the announcement of the films that were being nominated. It was like on a Tuesday morning at like 10 they would do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, no one else cared. Mm-hmm. No one else cared. And, you know, stuff like that puts things in perspective.
Right.
The world that we live in, that we have to believe is so big and important, it really is small and insignificant. There are still people who don't know who Louis C.K. is, and there are still people who don't know who any of these people
right.
are.
My mom is one of them,
and
like has no idea who Louis is.
You know, we could hate them all we want. It's like comic books. It's the same thing. You know, there's years and years of history and continuity in comic books, and you know, there's the image of the comic book shop or the comic book nerd who gives such shit to people who are trying to learn it. If someone asked me, you know, you asked me Red Hulk. You know, there's so many people who would have been like, you don't know?
Yeah.
I want you to read the Hulk. So of course I'm going to tell you. And I think that's the thing. Those are the bad Christians. You don't know the Bible? It's
right,
like,
right.
Be nice about it.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of, you know, the resentment comes from, the atheist side.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, there are many shitty atheists as there are Christians.
Sure. The only thing that there's a problem with in that is that, like, if it is Tyler Perry, it is Jeff Dunham, it is a certain audience, it gives people hope, it gives people meaning, it gives people community, it gives people morality.
Yeah.
We get into a foggy and a troubling area.
There are people growing up on this era of Simpsons, and we just have to deal with it. That's what the Simpsons is to them. You
that's
know?
It's interesting.
Like, fine.
Yeah. Well, we can't fight that, but then the problem comes in when you're kind of – when the judgment comes in, when we start looking at, like, who's right and who's wrong, whose truth is better than other truth, and it's kind of like, I don't acknowledge the Incredible Hulk. I only read the other whatever Hulk.
But is it really about who's right and wrong? And
it is.
As opposed to, like, who's happy and who's sad?
I like your approach.
Yeah.
But I do unfortunately see a lot of religious things going wayward when it does come down to whose truth is best.
Because I can know so much more about comic books than you and hold it over your head and make you feel shitty. And then I could go home alone and watch the X-Men cartoon on Netflix and masturbate.
Yep.
Or you could ask me who Hawkeye is. I could tell you in a way that isn't condescending, and we could go see the Avengers together.
Are we going to go see the Avengers together?
If I'm here. I'm looking forward to it. But you know what I mean? It's like, why not lead people in? Like with comic books, like, the industry is dying right now because they don't know how to get new people. Like, and they love the stories. Like, people love Thor and Captain America and the X-Men. And then you go into this brick. Like, I was working with Tom Papa this weekend, and he talked to me about it. He's like, you know, all these years of hits. He's like, I want to get into this stuff, but, like, people just want to turn me away.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, try this, try that.
Right.
That's
right.
What we have to do.
Yeah. You're proselytizing.
And it's like, even if you don't read it, it's fine, but just know it's out there. And I think that's the best way to handle religion.
That's what, man, you brought McDonald's, comic books, religion, relationships, sex, sexuality, everything, and a shit ton of comedy into the show. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you for doing it.
Yeah,
do you have anything
great.
You want to plug?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be on the next – when is this going to air?
Not for years, man.
Okay.
No, I don't know about dates, but what about, like, fucking website?
MikeLawrenceComedy.com. At the Mike Lawrence on Twitter.
Well, we'll tweet that out.
That'd be great. I'm going
to
be on this next season of John Oliver again.
That's great. That's fantastic.
So you could see me on that.
Fantastic. Yeah. Do you want to say keep it crispy?
Keep it crispy.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.